The Black Talk Radio Network is made possible in part with help from the Black Talk Media Project, a North Carolina-based nonprofit engaged in the production and distribution of independent digital black media. Find out more by going to blacktalkradionetwork.com or blacktalkmediaproject.org and look for the menu tab, Crowdfunding Black Media. Black Talk Media Project, helping to provide you with new black media for the new millennium.
Expressed by callers, guests, and hosts do not necessarily reflect those of the Black Talk Radio Network and Black Talk Media Project. Black Talk Radio is new black media for the new millennium. Good afternoon. You are tuned in to Black Talk Radio News. My name is Scotty Reed. I'm broadcasting from behind the enemy lines of USA Inc. Today is a Monday. It is October the 10th, 2016. I hope you all made it through the weekend without getting caught up with any of the slave catchers and tax collectors out there. That's what I call police, slave catchers and tax collectors. Because that is primarily what their duties consist of, based on many of the Department of Justice reports that we have gotten from cities like Baltimore, Ferguson, and beyond. So that is what I mean when I say I'm broadcasting from behind enemy lines. Let me go ahead and get into the program. We do have two guests scheduled today to discuss some interesting topics. First, we'll be speaking to Mr. Barry McLeod about politics and political candidates and his thoughts on a binding political contract. He is a seasoned entrepreneur, a man of versatility. He's the CEO of The Right Side of Me Productions. He owns and operates a mini hair salon and Be Alive Video Productions. He's also an author of 4 books, 16 screenplays, 17 stage plays, develops talents, casts actors, and manages his own company with a professional standard, ensuing audience rave and enjoy his show. So you can check him out online at The Right, and that is spelled as if you're writing a letter, so that is The Right Side of Me. com, The Right Side of Me. Again, that's right as in the written word. We'll also be joined today during the second half of today's program. We may have to go over the schedule hour, and that's okay, but we should be joined also by Miss T.C. Madison. This year, she was selected to participate in the Atlanta Black Theater Festival's Reader's Theater. And so tomorrow, which is October the 11th at 6 o'clock p.m., she will debuting a monologue titled Single is the New Black. The monologue takes a look at single women as a marginalized group and gives them a voice. She says there are parallel issues between marital status and race. And you can visit her online at tc-matteson.webs.com. Of course, these websites are linked up for you in the program description. Let me go ahead and give out the telephone numbers in case anyone wants to ask a question or make a comment. The conference line is 641-715-3660. The participant code is 549-032-pound. Hit *6 and 1 to comment on air. The studio line is 704-951-5030. So those are the ways that you could hit us up. Of course, there's the web-based Flash phone. If you don't want to make a long-distance call, go to blacktalkradionetwork.com. Look for today's program. You'll see a little button that says call a program or call a show. Click on that. You can make a free call to the conference line. So kind of excited to be on air today. Just a lot of things been going right after a lot of things went wrong last week. So I'm just, you know, thankful again for the privilege to be able to come on these airwaves and share my thoughts and my views on a variety of issues. Some of the things that caught my eye in the news today that we'll get to after our interviews. The first thing is Ruth Bader Ginsburg, the Jewish woman on the Supreme Court, the Jewish Caucasian woman on the Supreme Court, had some not so nice comments to say about some of the protests that these professional athletes and amateur athletes as well have been taking part in when it comes to the Slavers Anthem ritual. And for those that don't know what the Slavers Anthem is, I'm talking about the Star Spangled Banner or the quote unquote national anthem, which was written by a racist slaver celebrating a supposed victory over enslaved victims of slavery. So, she has some things to say, not so nice. And she could have kept that to herself. But I want to expand on that story further. If you was watching the presidential debates last night, Hillary Clinton mentioned the 13th Amendment and Abraham Lincoln when she was asked a question about, is it okay for politicians to be two-faced, to have a public view that they put out and then be saying stuff to other people behind the scenes in private, expressing something totally different. And I thought it was interesting that she brought up Abraham Lincoln in the 13th Amendment. And this is after the 13th film documentary by Ava DuVernay premiered on Netflix just 3 days ago. And by the way, it is trending on Netflix, the number one Netflix movie that's trending, original Netflix production. So that and some other news I will try to get to, but let's not wait any longer. Let's go ahead and get in touch with Mr. McLoy so we can bring him on and give him time to talk about what it is.
And the Right Side of Me Productions Incorporated.
Okay, we are getting the voicemail, well, Mr. McLoy. So if you're out there, Mr.
At the tone, please record your message. When you've finished recording, you may hang up or press 1 for more options. To leave a call number, press 5.
So we'll go ahead and leave Mr. Barry McLoy a telephone number that he can call to connect to the program. That's 704-951-5030. That's 704-951-5030, and we will get you connected, sir. All right, let's go ahead and end that call. So while we wait on Mr. McLoy to give us a call, he's probably busy, got something going on, or perhaps let me go ahead and make sure the studio line is in fact open. Yes, it is open. I want to talk about this Miss Ginsburg thing that's going on. First, let me check the conference line, see if he has called in through there. Okay, he hasn't called in to the conference line. All right, but I thought it was interesting, the proposal he was talking about, binding political contracts, if I understood what he wrote in, for these politicians. And seems like, you know, that just brings to my mind the contract with America that the Republicans had in the 1990s during the Clinton administration, and that was led by Newt Gingrich, who was also in that film, The 13th, which I don't know why he was invited to be in there when he played his role in the increase of people going into modern slavery today. So, but let me go ahead and pull up this clip of Miss Ginsburg. Again, this is a Supreme Court justice that is expressing these views. It was published by the Real News Network on their social media accounts. They also got a YouTube account, and it is posted to btrcommunity.com. I shared it there through my profile, so everything I discuss you can find on my BTR profile. That's at btrcommunity.com. Just look for Scotty T. That's my middle initial, and that's how you'll find my program, and you'll find some of these stories. So, but today, came across this story, and I'm like, this so-called, quote-unquote, liberal white woman on the Supreme Court of the United States is showing her true colors. So, I'm just going to let you hear what she said today when she was asked a question about Colin Kaepernick and the other athletes and other people who are not participating in the Slavers Anthem ritual. So this is what Ms. Ginsburg had to say.
What do I think? I think it's really dumb of them. Would I arrest them for doing it? No. I think it's dumb and disrespectful. I would have the same answer if you asked me about flag burning. If they want to be stupid, there's no law that should be prevent. If they want to be arrogant, there's no law that prevents them from that. What I would do is strongly take issue with the point of view that they are expressing.
Now, I don't see how any logical person can take issue with what Colin Kaepernick said was his reason for not participating in the Slavers Anthem. And he kept the focus narrow. He said because there are, and I'm paraphrasing what Mr. Kaepernick said, but Mr. Kaepernick said that there are bodies in the street and these slave catchers are not being held accountable and they're getting paid leave for it. Now, there are many, 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 I would say millions of people, millions of Americans, politicians, lawmakers, even people in the police ranks and what have you, have acknowledged this problem, this very, very serious problem related to slavery. Okay, this is the slave catcher's brutality. If you're going to enforce slavery, if you're going to enforce your will upon another person, oftentimes that's going to take brutality. And so I don't understand why she would take issue with the view that too many cops, aka slave catchers, are getting away with murder. Does she read the headlines? Or is she not seeing these videos? Is she not seeing that even when a prosecutor moves to indict one of these killer cops, that they're often not even indicted? Or if they are, for example, brought to trial like Randall Carrick was in Charlotte, that's the slave catcher, the former slave catcher who killed Jonathan Ferrell in Charlotte in 2013. You know, it just makes no sense. Just makes no sense. She has to not be paying attention, or she must approve of the brutality of the slave catcher. And what's interesting about this coming from this woman, she has a Jewish background. I don't know if she's a practicing Jew, but I know she comes from a practicing Jewish family. This woman, I believe, is in her 80s, if not in her 90s. I mean, she's pretty well advanced in her years. And so she would have been born and possibly an adult during the Third Reich in Germany. Now, in Germany, they used to make you stand for the flag, too. They used to make you give the Nazi salute. And those who didn't, I wonder if she would say that they were stupid and that they were idiotic. And would she disagree with their point of view? Because we're talking about the same thing. almost the same thing. In the United States, we're facing race-based terrorism through the slave catcher forces and whatnot. The United Nations has even recognized this when they just came out with a report last week about the racial terrorism and some of the just historic oppression. So you would think that a quote-unquote Jewish person would be more sympathetic. But I have found that a lot of them are not. A lot of them are racist. A lot of them are racist. If you don't believe that they are racist, go ask some of them Ethiopian Jews that live in Israel with those Ashkenazi Jews and ask them if racism is being practiced against them. Ask them, do they think it was racist for the Israeli government to secretly run this sterilization program and which cut the Ethiopian population in Israel in half? In 10 years, they cut their birth rate in half. That's some Nazi type stuff there, ain't it? So, again, I am not shocked. I am not surprised to hear this white woman come on here and just act like these men and women are stupid, that they have nothing to complain about, that she takes issue with her viewpoint, that people are being oppressed and a lot, for the most part, nobody's being held accountable. Because that is not a reality-based viewpoint from anybody who reads the news, checks out these different reports from the Department of Justice and other internal reports. No one can take that logical view. Unless they have an agenda, unless the facts don't matter and they have a racist agenda. So I'm, you know, looking at Ginsburg in that light, I should say. That's why I'm looking at her is very, very suspect as a racist. And this is one of the, and then again, as people, this is a presidential year for politics. And one of the things mentioned is the president gets to nominate people to the Supreme Court. And so we must elect Hillary if we want liberal justices on the court, or we must elect Donald Trump if we want conservative justices on the court. And see, that shouldn't even matter if we was living in a system based on justice. If that system was based on justice, it wouldn't matter. And when we're talking about the law should not have, I mean, you should be able to look at a law and not call it liberal. I mean, it wouldn't be called conservative. I don't know why we want to attach these labels, but as a judge, you're supposed to be impartial. So if you are a liberal or if you are conservative and you use your political views to interpret the law, you don't need to be sitting on the bench. Because you're supposed to be objective. All you're supposed to do is look at the law and look at the facts and interpret the law based on an objective reading of the law, not a slanted viewpoint on the law. So that is just ridiculous for this woman to say such a thing. And again, you know, why do they want to force patriotism? If, like I heard Jesse Ventura say, you can't force people to be patriotic because patriotism is earned. And just like Colin Kaepernick said, we're not getting liberty and justice for all. We're not getting that. So why should people who see the racist oppression of other people, why should we be patriotic? Why should we? And then, like he pointed out, it was written by a racist white man who also was a slaver. And if nothing was wrong with that song, why did they have to change it up? Why did they change it up? And why was it introduced during a time period in America when they was erecting all of these Confederate statues and you had Woodrow Wilson screening Birth of a Nation all up in the White House, which was nothing but a recruitment film for the Ku Klux Klan and all of that. So, again, you would think that a person with her background would be more sympathetic or empathetic or whatever word you want to use, but you would think that she will be able to understand where they're coming from. But apparently she don't. She said it's stupid. The only thing that she said that was constructive was the fact that you can't pass laws or you shouldn't pass laws and you can't force people to participate in these things. That is, unless they are in the military. If they're in the military, that's part of the Uniform Military Code of Justice. And so, yes, you are. When you in that uniform, you are expected to salute the flag, stand at attention, and all of that. You full participation in the ritual is required. But I think most people going into the military accept that, and they know that. But when we're talking about civilians, when we're talking about professional athletes or amateur athletes or high school students or whoever, how are you going to try to force them? And that is what this is. Yeah, you can't enforce the law. You can't write a law. Well, yes, they can. They put racist laws on the books all the time. But so let me correct my language. But according to their stated principles and stated values of freedom and liberty, then these men and women have freedom and they have the liberty not to participate in the slaver's anthem, cause obviously it is not creating unity in the community and never has and never will. So you would think that she would just stick to that fact instead of expressing her opinion about them being stupid. What makes it stupid and what makes it disrespectful? What's disrespectful is to expect the descendants of enslaved Africans and those who were not enslaved but still suffered a loss of their rights, still suffered terrorism, police terrorism, would be regularly kidnapped and sold into slavery. Hey, just like today. Just like today. That's disrespectful. So I don't believe respect is a two-way street. It is a two-way street. So, you know, she's got a lot of nerve to be telling people or calling this protest stupid. I wonder how she voted when that police department was being sued, and they argued they were being sued for violating somebody's rights or not protecting somebody's rights. And anyway, it made its way up to the Supreme Court. This wasn't that long ago, maybe within the last 6 or 7 years. Certainly she was on the bench. And at issue was, is again, what is the duties of the police? And the Supreme Court said that it is not to protect your right, regardless of them taking oaths to obey the Constitution and all. The Supreme Court said, no. That's not their job. Their job is slave catching and ticket writing, a.k.a. enforce the laws. So, you know, this country, man, a lot of these people, they just don't seem to get it, do they? Or they do get it, but they're racist, man. That, you know, just chalk it up to racism, because I don't see what's so hard to understand. And I don't see what's so disrespectful about somebody not participating in a ritual. They are not getting paid to participate like the NFL owners got millions of tax dollar monies to even start holding these flag rituals before games. They're paying these billionaires for patriotism. So that's, you know, it's just foul on so many levels. Another story that I think is important that people should look at and hear in just about, let me say, about 10 minutes, 11 minutes, we will hope to connect with our second guest, Miss Madison. But here's another article that caught my eye. Haitians, and, you know, just a quick note to the victims out there of the Hurricane Matthew. I thank all of those who sent me inquiries about the safety of my family. All we got was a couple of days of rain. It wasn't even that hard, and a little bit of wind. But other than that, you know, we didn't lose power in our area. Wasn't no trees getting knocked over and whatnot. So thank you for your concern. We, you know, were not impacted by Hurricane Matthew, but a couple of our family members, and I know more than just Max Parthas and his family, was impacted, as Max and them had a tree fall on the car and what have trees down all, because he's in a rural area like I am in. So, but he and his wife, Tribal Rain, are okay, and they keep them in your prayers, because as we stated on the network before, they're dealing with those issues with one of his daughters who was diagnosed with cancer, and she's about to have a major surgery. So please keep the Parthas family in your prayers if you are a praying person. For some reason, maybe it is because so many people want to look at this article about Haiti telling people, if you want to donate for the hurricane to help us, don't give it to the American Red Cross. So there was this article that's posted to the independent.co.uk is the website that published the article, but I'm having trouble pulling it up. Maybe it's because so many people are looking at the article or trying to look at the article that it's crashed their server and I'm not able to pull it up. So it's still trying to pull it up. And I didn't even have a chance to read everything, but I'll read a little bit from the preview when I posted it to btrcommunity.com. Shout out to the new members of btrcommunity.com as well. Just added about 3 or 4 new members to our new subscriber base social media platform. So yeah, this article's not coming up, so I'm gonna stop, but let me go ahead and just read the excerpt. It says, as the death count after Hurricane Matthew approaches 900 and reports of deadly cholera outbreaks begin to surface, Haitians have sent out desperate pleas for help. Government officials estimate at least 350,000 people needed assistance after the devastating storm. Yet, accompanying many requests for aid comes a warning. Do not give your money to the American Red Cross, which I did not know was another one of those corporations that's owned by the United States government. Just like they own a private prison called Unicor, it appears that the American Red Cross is an extension of the federal government, and Congress is supposed to have oversight, but yet they have been doing a very poor job of overseeing. I know I shared this story about a month or so ago, might have been less than that, maybe a few weeks ago, about the hurricane and the Haitians still complaining about the money that was stolen, that was supposed to go towards the Haitian earthquake relief fund. The Clintons were supposed to be managing some of that, and they're telling you how the Clintons and the Clinton Global Initiative and just ripped them off, and they didn't get any money. But the American Red Cross was talking about it was going to build these homes and houses for people that were homeless after the earthquake and what have you. And they only built 6 homes. They only built, I say again, 6 homes. Only 6. And they took in hundreds of millions of dollars. There is a football player who is of Haitian descent, of that nationality. Maybe his parents, great grandparents came here, immigrated from Haiti to America, or maybe he just came here, you know, for college and made it to the NFL. His number was 54. I can't remember his name right now, but his number was 54. And that's how many homes this NFL football player, a linebacker for the New York Giants, built in Haiti. And he's not like no mega superstar, and he doesn't have $100 million contract that he has signed and got all this money to spare and what have you. But whatever resources he was able to acquire and utilizing his own resources as well, this man was able to build 54 homes in Haiti, whereas the Red Cross, which took in hundreds of millions of dollars, was only able to produce 6 homes. And there's been a number of reports that came out to show that most of the money, like the Clinton Global Initiative Foundation, whatever it's called, most of the money, 80% or more, goes towards quote unquote administrative costs and people's salaries. That's sickening. That's just very sickening. And I would also say it's criminal. People donate money to organizations to see the task accomplished that you said you were going to accomplish. And to spend 80% of donations on administrative costs and people's salaries, that's just backwards. It should be the other way around. Only 10% should be going towards administrative costs and salaries or anything. The other 80% should be going towards the mission, whether that's whatever, buying equipment, paying for whatever services you need to deliver services. And you know, so that's just crazy. So the Haitians are urging people right now, according to this article on the independent.co.uk, they're saying, don't give your money to the American Red Cross, because the last time they was raising money, we saw very, very little in terms of relief from the Red Cross. So that's just disgusting, man, and it's inexcusable. Yet I have heard of no cause for hearings or anything like that from any politician to hold these people to give an account of how they spent that money. All right, so let me see. We're going to go ahead and take a station identification break in a few minutes here. We hope to be joined by Miss T.C. Madison. Again, as I stated at the beginning of the program, she was selected to participate in the Atlanta Black Theater Festival Readers Theater. That's going down tomorrow at 6 o'clock p.m. Eastern. If you're in the Atlanta area, you might want to check that out. And her monologue is titled Single is the New Black. And it takes a look at single women as a marginalized group and gives them a voice. She also says that there are parallel issues between marital status and race. So that is Miss T.C. Madison. Again, we have linked up to her website if anybody wants to go check out the website. And of course, she's going to give us further information if you're in the Atlanta area, how you can get some tickets to attend this event that's going down tomorrow at 6 o'clock p.m. Eastern time. Let me see. We still got a couple of minutes. Let me go ahead and take this station identification break. And remember, if you have any questions or comments, give us a call at 641-715-3660. The participant code is 549-032 pound. Hit star 6 and 1 if you would like to comment on air. The studio line, which is open, is 704-951-5030. We'll be back on the other side.
The Black Talk Media Project funds the use of new media technology in efforts to restore independent Black voices to the myriad of issues affecting Afro-descendant people all over the planet. If media can control the minds of the masses, as Malcolm X once said, then you must ask yourself, who is in control of the media targeting the masses of Black people today? Help bring back independence, self-determination, and respect for Black culture in the production of global media by joining the effort to crowdfund new Black media for the new millennium. Visit blacktalkmediaproject.org for more information on how you can invest in public Black radio for the masses.
All right, welcome back to Black Talk Radio News. Just want to give a quick shout out to the listeners who are listening to the stream through our YouTube channel. You can find us on YouTube at Black Talk Radio. Just put that in, or either Black Talk Media, and you'll find our channel. That's youtube.com/Black Talk Radio. That should take you to our channel. So just a shout out to those people who are there. I'm not in the chat room, so I can't see anything, but if you want to chime in, just give us a call. Again, the telephone numbers are 641-715-3660. The participant code is 549-032 pound. Hit *6 and 1 to comment on air. And that studio line is 704-951-5030. So let's go ahead and try to connect with Miss TC Madison. Maybe we'll have better luck with her than what we had with Mr. McLeod. And I hope Mr. McLeod is okay, as we did confirm with him right an hour or so before the program. And do we have Miss Madison on the line?
We do.
Greetings to you, Miss Madison.
Greetings to you, sir. How are you?
I'm not going to complain too much, because there's always somebody doing worse. So I like to count my blessings, you know?
That's right. I appreciate that.
Yeah. So when I come on airways, I'm usually complaining about our problems collectively. But as an individual, I'm just going to keep counting my blessings, ma'am.
I can appreciate that stance. I'm counting my blessings as well.
Well, thank you for reaching out to us, first of all, and then on short notice, because, you know, over the weekend, I kind of am not keeping up with the emails because I'm trying to take a break, you know, spend some time with the family. And my first grandson turned 5 yesterday. So on short notice, you were able to arrange with us to come on and talk about this event that you will be participating in Atlanta tomorrow. And you said that you will debut a monologue at this event at the Atlanta Black Theater Festival's Readers Theater, titled Single is the New Black. And you say also that there are some parallel issues between marital status and race. So if you will, ma'am, first give us a little bit of background about yourself, and then go into your participation in this event in Atlanta tomorrow.
Okay. Well, my name is TC Madison. I am originally from Detroit, Michigan. I relocated to Atlanta, Georgia, so I could go to college. I went to Clark, and I was in their mass comm department. While I was there, my gift as a writer was awakened. I've written poetry, commercials, screenplays. I have a novel titled His Silent Rage, and my most recent project is Single is the New Black. The Atlanta Black Theater Festival is a wonderful outlet for new and upcoming writers, producers in the genre of theater. And what happens is thousands of people submit their scripts through this festival in the hope that they will be selected and their projects will be produced. So my project was one of those that was selected this year, and tomorrow at 6 p.m., I will be debuting Single is the New Black. And it just kind of takes a look at single people as a marginalized group. I'm not sure if you've ever heard how some people communicate with single women, especially single African-American women today. We have a lot riding on our shoulders in terms of responsibility, getting it together so we can prepare to be wives, or even bearing the brunt of being single in today's society. So it's a dynamic piece that explores each of those angles.
Well, let's discuss one of those angles. I'm single. I'm divorced.
Okay.
Yeah, I've been divorced for quite a while, since about 1994, maybe. I have two children from that marriage that I raised, and you know, who have given me some beautiful grandchildren. And I have chosen to remain single ever since. Now, I did date a little bit after that, for, you know, maybe about 10 years or so. But I would say I probably haven't dated in the last 5 years. And I truly have no interest in dating right now. I'm married to my work. And I feel like, you know, while it's possible if I had the right partner that it wouldn't interfere with my work, but, you know, I don't really get out to meet anyone like that. And I'm just not really into that scene right now. I'm really focused on self right now. So, so, but you are focusing on women. So how do you see that they are marginalized? Help me understand that. Help us understand what you mean when a person is marginalized simply because they're single. I already can think of some things, but please share yours.
Let's go to social media, for instance. I'm not sure if you've ever seen any of the memes that tell women to love a broken man, love a man down on his luck, pick a man up and help him put his life back together. Or memes that say, single women, you don't have to be loose like change. There was one popular meme where, at the beginning of the year, where there was an African-American woman and she's walking into her future. She had her hair done. She had on a beautiful dress. She had on high heels, and she was walking into her destiny. Well, somebody took that same meme and broke it down. They diminished her image and gave her all these bags to carry. And the flip side of it was, this is what it really looks like.
Well, don't you think, as a people, you know, regardless of gender, but as a black man, black woman, black child, black children, that we do carry a lot of excess baggage? And I'm not saying baggage of our own making, but I'm talking about the baggage of oppression.
Right, but you have to be open to the idea that, just like you, we as African Americans can elect to focus on the positive, so that we can work through that baggage and we can walk into our purpose. So it doesn't mean that the bags don't necessarily exist, but if I create a vision and I'm saying I'm walking into something different, I'm walking into better, why would that be diminished? Because she's single, because she's alone, because she's a woman.
I got you. Yeah, because, see, I'm being the president of the Black Talk Media Project and founding it on the vision that Malcolm X relayed to me through a video where he talked about the power of media and how it could make a person look innocent and make the guilty, make the guilty look innocent and the innocent look guilty. And so, you know, we expand that. And we realize the power of media, which includes images, visuals, and what have you. And I got you. We do need to create positive images, and because we don't have a whole lot of positive images in corporate media to speak of. You know, you have some here and there, and what have you. I don't want to act like that we don't have some good, you know, images and role models out there, but I get where you're coming from. If somebody's on social media and they create an image that is meant to promote a positive view, to be uplifting and to encourage and to inspire, what kind of person would then turn, take that and diminish it and turn it into a negative?
Right. Exactly. So we combat that a lot. And not just with the images especially, but also in conversation. I belong to several groups where we have discussions about relationships, a woman's place, and you'll see things like that in conversation on social media as well. And I won't deny anybody's truth, but essentially a lot of African-American men feel like African-American women are not pulling their weight in relationships, and there is more to be done.
Really?
Some people do feel like that. They feel like the new age woman is more focused on her education. She is bringing masculine energy into the relationship, doesn't know how to submit, and those are all problematic issues. And so we talk about that too. You know, we talk about that in Single is the New Black also.
Wow. Well, you know, it's hard for me to speak on this from experience, since I've been out that scene so very long in the social media that I'm interacting with, and the people in my social media circles, we are not talking about that kind of stuff. We are talking about, you know, social and political issues, and how do we solve the problem of institutional racism and modern day slavery on this planet. But I do have to admit, I have seen some whack views. The person, I may not have been connected to him, but you know how you could see the post of a friend or something like that on social media. And I have seen ignorant comments, but most of those are usually associated, or the people are that are posting those that I saw, I'm just speaking on what I saw, are associated with some kind of religious ideology.
I've seen both. I've seen the association with a religious standard in terms of how a woman should carry herself and her role in her home, and I've also seen it in a secular type of conversation. So I've seen it on both ends, and I want people to walk away with an understanding that this does have ties to how we combat social issues in America, because you have to understand that whether you are in a relationship or you are in a marriage, we are all positioned to help in this war that we're fighting. But you have to understand what your players bring to the table. So just because an individual is alone, that doesn't mean they don't have a gift or a set of knowledge or a set of skills that can be applied for our fight towards social justice.
So you mean to tell me that single black women, non-married black women, are being marginalized to the point that there are some people who find that there's no place in the quote-unquote movement?
Well, not even that there's no place in the movement, but they don't understand the position in the movement. I know for me, a lot of African-American women were offended at the response from African-American men when Corrine Gaines was assassinated. We felt like a lot of men were quiet, not as loud, not as upset, or not as ready to fight as they were when Freddie Gray or Trayvon Martin or any other African-American male face the same fate. So you see disparaging differences in the response and even social justice issues.
Now, on the Corrine Gaines issue, we did cover that extensively on our network, on different programs. It was talked about. We got program that comes on Wednesday nights right now. They were on more often, but because of the work schedules, they had to reduce their time to 2 hours on Wednesday nights. It's the Lotus Place, and it's all women on that panel, even though, you know, they invite males to participate. But they talked about it from a woman's perspective. I can't recall anything like that coming up. But for me, you know what issue I was dealing with at the time of Corrine Gaines? The issue I was dealing with is another issue that I think is stupid, and that is self-defeating. It is not constructive whatsoever. And I was like, okay, all you folks out there that talk about this light skin privilege that so-called light skin black folks have in this country, I was like, how did that light skin privilege serve Corrine Gaines?
It didn't at all. It was a little bit sad. What I remember watching the video with her interaction with the police in the car, and it immediately took me to a place of slavery or slave times, because I know that those mothers in those days had to talk to their children, and they had to teach their children to respond to their voice over the voice of an overseer or a master, because if they didn't understand their mother, they whatever their fate would be could be more detrimental than whatever the situation was right then. And so when she was speaking to her son, this light-skinned, beautiful, intellectual woman who is trying to defend her rights as an African-American living in America, it was just heartbreaking on a different type of level for me. So it set in my spirit differently. And I wanted to know who will say her name repeatedly, who will honor her, who will stand for her the way that we stood for so many others. Because we haven't seen the same type of protest for her.
Why do you think that is? Well, let me ask you this question, Ms. Madison. Do you think that's necessarily the fault of the males? Because for the most part, most of these protests, there are a lot of women who are in leadership positions who have been staging and organizing these protests. So why haven't they been organizing for their sisters?
Some of them have been organizing on the back end.
Okay.
There are several groups who have come out and organized, and even as a regimen of self-care to combat, you know, domestic violence, since that's something that Mrs. Gaines also battled. But when the news initially broke, the response from our counterparts was so negative, a lot of women felt like they couldn't organize properly.
Wow, so, I'm so glad.
We didn't feel like we could organize with men the same way we had come together for other issues. And so, again, there are separate groups for self-care, for social justice, and respect to her. So,
Taking it back to something you said, you mentioned slavery. And on this station, if you tune into this station, you will often hear that slavery was never abolished. The 13th Amendment made an exception for slavery, and you can't abolish something and then have an exception for it. And that exception was as punishment for crime. And we do call the police slave catchers. That's language you will hear used on this network. But in relation to our sisters, okay, we do this program called New Abolitionist Radio. It's all males. It's three black males, myself included. That comes on right before the Lotus Place does. And we call ourselves New Abolitionists because slavery was never abolished. So obviously you need an abolitionist movement, just like we had one prior to 1865. So we define slavery as pre-1865 and post-1865. And we are all over these stories week in, week out. And we've been doing it for 4 years and telling people this is slavery. This ain't mass incarceration. This is slavery. All of the police brutality, symptom of slavery. They haven't abolished slavery. And so we would report on the abuses that our sisters are facing on these prison plantations. There was a Michigan prison where they were hog tying these women and leaving them on their cell floors butt naked, and oftentimes would not give them any food or water for days. And then in California prisons not that long ago, they were sterilizing them sisters, tricking them into getting their tubes tied and what have you. So that's eugenics right there. And so we was like, where is the feminist movement? Now, we didn't say where's the black feminist movement. We didn't try to qualify it by race, because in the abolitionist movement, while we acknowledge that black people are impacted by modern slavery the most, they are enslaving people of all different classifications. So we didn't put a qualifier on it. Where are the black feminists at? We said, where are these feminist groups at? Where's Ultraviolet at? Where are these people that be talking about Say Her Name? And I don't hear, still to this date, Miss Madison, I have not heard the issue of our women in prison being raised. And we have reported, they are the fastest growing demographic of new prison slaves in this country today. Where is the feminist at on this?
I think the director, Eva, I don't want to mispronounce
Eva DuVernay, just did the documentary on the 13th. Yeah.
Right. So my hope is that she will continue with that, with a female version of that, because she took us through the generational trauma of mass incarceration to let us know that this is the new plantation, and women are affected by that. That they are also one of the most forgotten groups in terms of mass incarceration, being disconnected from their children, their loved ones, intimate relationship. They go there, and they go there basically to die with certain sentences. So I agree with you there, and I agree that that particular group needs a louder voice. And you'll also see people like Freeway Rick Ross. He sometimes will post a picture of female inmates, and he encourages authors, writers, anybody who wants to connect to that community to be a source of encouragement and upliftment to communicate with them, because some of them do get to go home and they face the same issues that the men will face.
Right. And see, that's one of the things that I would like to get away from. And this is called codification in counter-racist circles of operating in code. Instead, why do we have to genderize or racialize these issues when we know the enemy is just going to simply focus on race and make it about race instead of the issue? You understand? Let me restate that. For example, when we talk about prison slavery, we don't differentiate from the victims. We don't care if you're white, mm-hmm. Hispanic, Asian, Polynesian. We don't care if you're a male, female. We don't care if you're an elderly person, a middle-aged adult, or a child, because the children get sentenced to slavery, too. And so then right. That way, nobody who's against our agenda, which is opposing and ending slavery, can come to us and try to divert our attention to side issues and, well, black on black crime and all that. 'Cause you know how they do, right? And so
it trickles down, and it'll be a distraction and a diversion, and the important issue will be left on the floor.
And that's one thing we've tried to do through the new abolitionist movement, is not to genderize it either. And I do think it is a mistake, and I do acknowledge that most media that we see, including her documentary, they mainly mm-hmm. focus on men. And it's not a male problem. It's not just a black male problem. It's a problem with human beings being enslaved.
Yeah, I agree. I think they are a very neglected group. And people are coming together slowly to say, hey, what about these women over here? You know, they are affected by the same system also. So hopefully people will continue to give them a voice.
Mm-hmm.
As a part of the bigger issue, and not just isolated, like you said, isolated in terms of gender and that kind, or race and that kind of thing.
So tomorrow, the Atlanta Black Theaters Festival, and that kicks off at 6:00 p.m. Now, we do have listeners in Atlanta area, and I know it was short notice, but if you still have any tickets that they can get a hold of, how can they get some tickets and come out and hear you themselves in the flesh, giving this monologue on Single is the New Black?
I do have a pair of free tickets for anybody in the metro Atlanta area. All you have to do is email me at tc.madison@yahoo.com, and I will be more than happy to gift you with a ticket so you can come out. After the stage production, there is also a talk back, so you can let me know what you thought, ask questions about the project, ask about the creation of the project. So it's really going to be a dynamic experience. So email me, and I will be happy to gift your audience members with a pair of tickets so you can come check me out.
And I have linked to your website. They can contact you through the website as well.
Yes, sir.
And let me ask you this. Do you all have a vibrant writers community down there in Atlanta?
Definitely.
Because we hear a lot about Tyler Perry and his studios, if he still had those studios in Atlanta. But I know it's got to be more than just him. Because, you know, we got a lot of talented people among us, so good to hear that. And you say you have screenwriting experience?
Yes.
Anything that we know or should check out?
Not anything, but my only project in print outside of Single is the New Black tomorrow is His Silent Rage, and that is a novel. My screenplay information is I'm a ghostwriter on a project, so I can't really go into detail about that.
The reason I'm asking is because I don't believe too much in coincidences. I mean, sometimes coincidences happen, but right. We were not able to connect with our first guest for whatever reason, and he's written screenplays and stuff in the past, and you know, I read your bio. I knew you were a writer, but I didn't know you had screenplay experience. And the reason I'm mm-hmm. asking is because You mentioned Ava DuVernay's 13th. And yes, we did a review of that. If you want to check it out, New Abolitionist Radio, we did a special broadcast that night when it debuted on October the 7th. And overall, we say that that film is better than anything in the mainstream in terms of pointing people to the 13th Amendment. But I don't think that they did a good enough job to convey that this isn't mass incarceration, this is slavery. And we talked about there being a reform message when there needs to be an abolitionist message. And and so, because you can't reform slavery, you have to abolish slavery. And so, but we're very appreciative of her effort. At least she put the 13th Amendment in front of people and in their minds, and hopefully they'll go read it for themselves and they'll come to the realization that slavery was not abolished by the 13th. So anyway, we said, well, how can we improve upon what she did? What would we do different? And so we want to produce our own documentary on the 13th to give, to focus more on the 13th itself, how it got passed, the history of the 13th, because the U.S. Constitution isn't the first time that language has shown up. And we wanted to focus on Lincoln's betrayal, because he knew full well what he was doing, was spreading slavery and was not ending slavery. And so we want to do a documentary, but none of us on New Abolitionist Radio have screenwriting experience. So, you know, I could look it up, but I'd rather like contract with some people, you know, even if we have to pay to help us with this project to make our own 13th screenplay. That sounds like something you would be interested in?
That sounds like something I would love to do. And I think these are things that keep the conversation going. Like you said, that was a wonderful debut effort on her behalf to highlight the need for reform and the connection between mass incarceration now and slavery. But that's not going to be enough. Like, we have to continue this conversation in different formats so we can completely open the minds of those who don't have knowledge of it. So I would totally love that.
Well, I will definitely put you down for when we have a conference call for the initial planning of it. Okay. And I mean, even if we have to pay, we're going to try to raise some money. We've already had people who said they would contribute to it, so we want to try to make it happen. So thank you. I'll definitely be in touch with you on about that. You got anything else coming up, any other events outside of tomorrow that's coming up?
Just for the rest of the week. The festival is a week long.
Okay.
And I will be at different events at the festival. It runs until the 15th of this month. So just come out to the festival. I would love to have people in attendance at Single is the New Black, but definitely come out to other events, meet other writers, actors, actresses, producers. It's really a phenomenal experience, and a lot of it will deal with social justice, African American issues, people who don't have voices. It's really phenomenal, even for children. So definitely come out. I'll be out for the rest of the week at that event.
Well, you know, I can't speak for all men, obviously, because I'm just one man. But I just want to apologize, you know, for the negative experiences you have experienced, you and the other sisters out there have experienced from other people who share my gender, and just take it under consideration that everybody is not right spiritually, everybody's not right mentally, you know, or intellectually, and that we should be patient with those. And I will take it upon myself to continue to correct males in my presence that I see engaging in that kind of activity, because it is not constructive and it is not going to lead to us solving the problem.
That's right. And I don't want anybody to think that this is like a male bashing piece. It's really not. It's just us talking about our perspective as women. But I do appreciate your acknowledgement and your apology and your willingness to correct areas where you see, you know, that can be improved for men. So I really appreciate that.
You're welcome. Did you have anything you would like to leave the listeners with in closing?
Because we need each other. men and women. We have to work together so we can make sure we're building instead of tearing each other down. So a more unified system from men and women will create the changes, I feel like, more powerfully that we need for our community. And if you want to come out and see Single is the New Black, you can go to abtf.eventbrite.com.
All right. Hey, send me the link to that event, and I'll make sure we send it out to our social networks.
Okay. I'll definitely do that.
Well, Miss Madison, it was definitely a pleasure speaking with you today, and I look forward to working with you in the future and having you back as a guest on this program.
Thank you. I appreciate you. I would love that in the future. So thank you for having me.
You're welcome. You have a great day.
You too. Bye-bye.
Bye. All right, that was Miss T.C. Madison. Check out her website, T.C.-Madison. Let me spell that, M-A-T-T-I-S-O-N. So that's T.C.-Madison.webs.com. If you're in the Atlanta area, please hit her up. She says she got a couple of tickets that she's willing to give away to this event that's taking place tomorrow in Atlanta at 6 o'clock p.m. Eastern at the Atlanta Black Theaters Festivals Readers Theater. I'm going to take another station identification break, and I'm just going to hit a couple of news items. Oh, before I do that, seems like we have a call. Who do we have on the line? Welcome to Black Talk Radio News.
Hello?
Yes, area code 352. Who do we have on the line?
This is Darius McCloud. Darius McCloud.
Hey, Mr. McCloud, we were supposed to speak with you at the top of the hour. I guess we got the time zones mixed up, huh?
Well, I was been sitting here the whole while. I was waiting to. I thought you were going to call me.
I did, but I got the voicemail.
Well, my phone never did ring, and so I was listening to your interview with Ms. Madison there, and I heard you mention that we didn't make our connection. So I just listened to her full interview there, and I said, well, I just call him back.
Well, hang on for me, mister. Mr. McCloud, hang on, and we will do your interview on the other side of this break, okay?
Okay.
All right, hang tight. You're listening to Black Talk Radio News. My name is Scotty Reed, broadcasting from BlackTalkRadioNetwork.com, New Black Media for the New Millennium. Stay tuned. We'll be back after this short break.
The Black Talk Radio Network is made possible in part with help from the Black Talk Media Project, a North Carolina-based nonprofit engaged in the production and distribution of independent digital black media. Find out more by going to blacktalkradionetwork.com or blacktalkmediaproject.org and look for the menu tab, Crowdfunding Black Media. Black Talk Media Project, helping to provide you with new black media for the new millennium.
You are tuned in to Black Talk Radio, New Black Media for the New Millennium. And welcome back to Black Talk Radio News. Again, my name is Scotty Reed, broadcasting from behind the enemy lines of USA Inc. And we have Mr. Barry McCloud on, and we wanted to switch gears and talk about politics. And he sent me an email, and I thought it was pretty interesting. He was talking about political contracts and holding these politicians to a contract. And it just reminded me, as I stated at the beginning of the program, of the Republicans' contract with America. And I remember that very vividly. And it black folks didn't turn out, you know, we didn't get a good deal out of that contract they had with America back in the 90s during the Clinton administration. So let's welcome on Mr. Barry McCloud. Is that how I pronounce your last name, sir?
Yes, it's Barry S. McCloud. That would be me. Thank you.
All right. Well, thank you for joining us today. I already read your bio, but I'd like to give you an opportunity to tell people a little bit about yourself before we jump into this topic that you brought up.
Well, Well, I am a writer, producer, director, composer. I've spent the last couple of decades, well, the last three plus decades, you know, doing entertainment in different capacities. And I've written and self-published four books, and I've written about 16 different screenplays, and I've written now, I don't know, 16, 17 stage plays in which I have directed and produced each of those. And I currently right now am touring, but well, we're not touring, we're in Florida, and we're working on touring this particular production throughout the state of Florida and wherever else we get an opportunity. It's called Blessed by the Fable, which is a comedy gospel musical, which is a pretty good play. And so I'm pretty deep into writing and producing and music and directing and that type of thing.
Yeah, sounds really great, because again, I'll take you back to what I stated to Miss Madison. People don't really realize the power of media. And media comes in many different forms, including plays and movies and, you know, books. That's media. And it has tremendous influence, more influence than a lot of people realize. So that's great that you are working so strong in that particular area. All these different areas of media. Very talented, very talented.
Thank you.
So you had mentioned to me in an email that you wanted to discuss, you know, a concept of holding these candidates to a contract. But before I get to that, though, you also sent me a picture, a painting. Was that your painting where it shows, and forgive me, I don't have it up right now, but it shows a white baby sucking from the teat of a black woman, and it has to do, it's symbolizing how Caucasians are sucking at the teat of Africa and draining her of her precious resources or what. You sent me that, didn't you?
No, I'm sorry, I didn't send that one.
Oh, you did not? Okay, that must have been another person. All right, but I thought that was a very powerful image. Whoever sent me that, thank you for sending me that. Mr. McLeod, explain to us where you're coming from with this concept about contracts and politicians. And what got you to this point to say, you know what, we need to have them sign contracts, if indeed if that's what you're talking about. Please lead us into this conversation.
Okay, here's the thing. Here's the thing, Scotty. This month I'm looking to turn 58. Okay, so I've been on the planet for a good little minute now, and I think about how my grandmother, when I was a little boy, how she would say, you know, these politicians, they don't do nothing but lie to us to get our votes, and then they get in the office and then they do whatever they want to do. And then I listened to my mother say the same thing throughout her life.
Mm-hmm.
I'm saying the same thing throughout my life.
Mm-hmm.
My children are adults now, and they're saying the same thing. And the decades and the trend just keeps going on and on and on. And so I kind of take it personal now that, you know, we as a people, regardless of what our race or gender you are, we continue to allow this to happen to us, and we don't do anything about it, and we keep falling for the okey-doke. Every time there's an election, whether it's local or national, you know, we keep falling for these people who have these certain images and certain personas and the gift of gab and the charismatic whatever, and we decide we're going to believe in this one again and this one again, and we keep getting bamboozled decade after decade.
Mm-hmm.
So I personally feel like this. If we had a contract for politicians, which I know a lot of people will say this is far-fetched and it could never happen, but I would love to see the conversation at least be started, and I would love to see people get behind this conversation across the board and start to put some pressure on these new ambitious people who want to be in different leadership positions, whether it's local or statewide or nationally or whatever, and say, hey, look, you said that you were going to do this, this, and this. Now, we're not stupid, okay? We understand that there's a process to everything, and you can't do certain things overnight. So let's get real here. Let's be realistic. How long would it take you to do what you said you would do? If it'll take you a year or 2 years, tell us that. If it'll take you 6 months, tell us that. If it'll take you however long, tell us that. And we would like for you to put it in writing and say, this is what you intend to do. And keep it real and keep it honest and be willing to step down if that is say that, for example, 12 items on a contract, on that contract I'm speaking.
I'm already having some thoughts, sir. I'm with you. Go ahead.
And so like once you get like 3 or 4 of these, you've exceeded the time period for 3 or 4 of these agendas that you promised and you have not delivered, you're willing to step down. No, you must step down. And we'll let whoever else is in the position, just like when they fire a head coach in a sporting event and the interim person takes over. Okay? You just got to step down. And if we can have a trend going forward like that, you know, then first of all, we have different issues that are black, white, and whatever. But if the people as a whole got behind this type of a concept, then that's going to make some changes going forward. Now, some of the changes may not really manifest until some years down the road.
Right.
Everything got to start somewhere. So, you know, what I just like to do is just bring this kind of a concept, contract with politicians, you know, to the forefront, and hopefully see more and more media grab a hold to it and make some noise about it, because there's always going to be some wannabe clever, some wannabe slick politician who's going to think he can out-finesse the contract. Well, let's just go ahead and let's just get the ball rolling. Let's see if we can make something happen so that perhaps maybe our children or grandchildren or great-grandchildren might have some different experiences from what we're having, and they won't be like me saying, I heard my grandparents, I heard my mother, and now I'm saying it in my generation, and now my children are saying their generation. Politicians don't do nothing but tell us what they want to tell us, get our vote, get in office, and do what they want to do, and then sell us a bunch of BS as to why this ain't working out and why they still striving to do this and do that. A lot of that is a bunch of BS, and everybody knows it. So, you know, we need to have a different standard, and we need to have some kind of policy, some kind of system put in place that makes them accountable to what they said while they were running, and puts them under the gun to say, well, hey, look, if I can't deliver, I play fair. I step down and see if anybody else can do better. And that person has to be under contract just as well.
And so I imagine it would be written in such a way that it would be legally binding.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. But, you know, the one thing, I'm not a Donald Trump fan, but I'm going to say this about Donald Trump. This is what these are the points that Donald Trump did to me. First of all, he's not a traditional politician, okay? And the other thing, he talks about not being politically correct. You see, I like it when people say things in layman terms, because, you know, I watch a lot of different news shows from time to time, and I listen to a lot of different interviews with different people. And I listen to some of the lingo that's being said, and I got a dictionary.com app on my homepage on my cell phone, and I use it. You know, but the average person don't know what a lot of these words mean, you know, what people say. But you know what? So what? You don't have to speak the most articulate way for us to understand where you're coming from and what you said and what you meant. You know, and so I would like to see a contract that's in layman terms, that is well thought out, very strategically organized, that a politician would have to show a level of corruption to be able to deny it as being a valid document. You see what I'm saying? I'd like to see it prepared just that well, okay, so that, you know, a politician, or whether you, like I say, a local, state, or national, would have to be able to look at that and say, yeah, I'll do that. I'll be proud to do that. Put them on the spot, because you had the confidence to jump up and tell us in every other medium what you're willing to do and what you're going to do. Okay? But it always turns out, seems like 98-99% of the time, it turns out that you didn't do all the things that you said you were going to do. Matter of fact, you didn't do 20% of what you said you were going to do.
Right.
And so generation after generation, we just keep playing the fool.
Well, and let me jump in here. Position. Let me jump in here and give you and the listener some information in case somebody's listening for the first time. Our regular listeners are aware of the first national convention that'll be going down October the 21st in Atlanta, Georgia. It's the first conference for 1 million conscious Black voters and contributors. Now, this is a movement that has been started by James Clingman, who is a well-known economist, author himself, a columnist who has been published in many different newspapers. He's also the author of Blackonomics. Then we got Baba Amafika Gayuka, who is the other founder of this movement. This isn't an organization yet, but it's a movement. Okay, it's a loose, but they do have chapters, and these are just people coming together in agreement that we need to do something different in terms of the Black vote. We give the vote to, we number one, are not organized as a Black of voters, even though 80% of us cast ballots for Democrats. That's still not organization. That wasn't organized. You just do that because you've been doing it for so long. And Democrats don't tend to sound as racist as Republicans. And so, but they've done nothing, in my opinion, to warrant that kind of loyalty from the Black voter base. But at the same time, we don't have real autonomous Black political organizations or movements, and this hopes to be the start of one where you have to be unaffiliated. You're pledging to be unaffiliated unless you live in a state where you have to declare to participate in the primaries. Therefore, yeah, we understand, you know, because we don't want to miss any votes. So, but in your heart and in your mind, you're not a Democrat, you're not a Republican. You know, we're coming up with a Black agenda, so to speak, just like these other groups. You got AIPAC, you know, you got the Jews who come together politically and bring their money together. And you see these presidents go down there and promise what they going to do for Israel. You know, that's crazy. And I don't never see them going to any Black organization and talking about what they going to do for Black folks. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. And so that is the start. We have posted a link to that event, or you can just simply go to IamOneOfTheMillion.com where you can get information on the start of this movement. It's a much needed movement. But getting back to, like you said, on the contract, so they have a plank. They got 13. How many planks do they have? If I'm not mistaken, it might be more than 13. But one of the planks is they want to end the modern day slavery and human trafficking. They want a removal of the slavery exception clause from the 13th Amendment, which moves slavery from the plantation, from plantation control to prison control. And so we want to, you know, that's one of the planks. So let's say a politician would be it Donald Trump, Jill Stein, Gary Johnson, Hillary Clinton, whoever, the Constitutional Party, whatever, and they want the Black organized vote, then we would have them sign the contract. And let's just say one of those planks on that contract would be what we asked for. You have to introduce an amendment to remove the exception clause from the 13th Amendment. We expect this to be done within your first term. Within your first term or whatnot, or we expect this legislation to be approved, or we want Black farmers to be fully compensated and paid recompense for the racism practice. You know what I'm saying? So we could debate among ourselves what's going to be in the contract.
Pardon me, but to jump in right there, I want to say this before we got to talking about other things, and this slips away something. Now, I have not done all the fact-checking, okay? But one of the things that I pay attention to with Hillary Clinton, she talks about, well, you know, there's too many Black men in prison for crimes that are not, you know, equivalent to the amount of time that they have been given. And she talks like Donald Trump and saying, we're going to look at that, okay? And then if I have this information correct, and if I don't, I apologize, but I just want to utilize this to make a point, but I believe it was her husband that passed that bill into law.
Yes, working with the Republicans.
And so if I'm not hearing her say, if I become president, by now me and my husband, or at least me, I have seen where that bill has not been a good idea, that it has been detrimental to a lot of families and men who are in prison. And so when I become president, I am going to, it's the term repeal. I don't know where you're going to get rid of it.
Yeah, you're using the right language. You're using the right language. No, they're not talking about repealing.
I don't hear her saying this. I hear her talking just like Donald Trump, saying, well, we're going to look at this.
Right.
That's the same BS that all of them pull off, you know, successfully. Whoever wins, they pull this crap off. I'm going to look at this. We're going to look at that. It's not, well, I am going to do this.
Right.
It's, I'm going to look at this. See, a contract is going to have some clarity. Are you going to do it, or are you going to look at it? Then just let us know.
Get straight to the point. Did you happen to, Mr. McCloud, did you happen to catch the debate last night?
I refused to watch it because I just figured I get more of the information that would probably...
You're like me then. You're like me. If it's anything happen that's newsworthy, I'll hear about it later. Otherwise, yeah. I can find more constructive things to do with my time. So so I did watch some of it. And I was saving this story for New Abolitionist Radio Wednesday night. But I'm going to go ahead and play it for you right now, because it's speaking directly to what you talked about. Now, you sent me the email last week. You sent me the email last week about these two-faced lying politicians and what have you. This is what was stated last night. Listen to this clip and this question that was asked of Hillary Clinton. Let me pull it up.
Is it okay for politicians to be two-faced? Is it acceptable for a politician to have a private stance on issues? Secretary Clinton,
well,
your 2 minutes.
Right. As I recall, that was something I said about Abraham Lincoln after having seen the wonderful Steven Spielberg movie called Lincoln. It was a masterclass watching President Lincoln get the Congress to approve the 13th Amendment. It was principled and it was strategic. And I was making the point that it is hard sometimes to get the Congress to do what you want to do, and you have to keep working at it. And yes, President Lincoln was trying to convince some people. He used some arguments. Convincing other people, he used other arguments. That was a great... I thought a great display of presidential leadership.
Look, now she's blaming. She got caught in a total lie. Her papers went out to all her friends at the banks, Goldman Sachs, and everybody else. And she said things, WikiLeaks, that just came out. And she lied. Now she's blaming the lie on the late, great Abraham Lincoln. That's one that I have...
Okay, I'm going to stop it there. And again, Lincoln to me is one of the most despicable human beings to ever lived. He pulled off the world's greatest deception in convincing people that they abolished slavery. I'm glad she brought up Lincoln. And Lincoln did a lot of illegal stuff, too, to get votes for the 13th Amendment. Okay, but he did not abolish slavery. That was never his intent. And so when I hear these people talk about Lincoln, I'm like, yeah, he was a liar. He told abolitionists what they wanted to hear, while in letters to Confederates, he was telling them what they wanted to hear, something totally different. But his actions showed me that he was not against slavery. Okay, because you can't abolish something and then make exceptions for it. And then, you know, these Confederate states passed the Black Codes and then in the North, too. And then, you know, so, man, but that I thought really spoke to what you were talking about these liars.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, and the thing about it is, you know, I would love to see somebody set up a website, you know, where when people get up there and they say one thing and then they contradict it, or it's proven that they flat out lied about it, that information is there. When people make different decisions in leadership positions, whether they're judges, whether they're lawyers, whether they're state attorneys, whether they're police chiefs, whatever, you know, we need to know who these people are. And when you see some of the crimes that's taking place from the actual murders of innocent people, that, and what I'm referencing to happen to be black males, and I was listening to you and Ms. Madison talking about Corrin Gaines, who are these people that make these decisions? You know, see, they get away with doing stuff and staying under the radar, and we never know who they are. They need to be exposed, you know. And so when politicians and the likes get up and they blatantly lie and they play this political game, there needs to be a website that's designed just for that type of thing. When somebody raises an issue or something, you can go to that website and type in that person's name or the topic of the discussion, and bingo, there it is, you know. So that there'll be a lot of reference, you know, and we don't have to worry about doing research and stuff and trying to go through all of that process to come up with facts that may be needed at a particular time, you know. But yeah, you know, Lincoln, yeah, he was very clever in what he did, and you know, all of these years later, and the amazing thing is there's still a lot of people today that think that he ended slavery, you know.
Yeah.
And so, you know, it's how can you convince somebody of something that they don't believe and been acclimated to all of their life?
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But one thing about the history books, you know, they tend to have the facts, you know, but we just don't go and read them, so we get caught up into the lies that that's in the immediate media or whatever circumstance, you know. But the history books is how we know what really happened.
Yeah, not really though. Now history,
I mean, not every history book, but
yeah,
got the facts from, there is information.
Yeah, if you go to independent authors and stuff like, but the school approved textbooks and stuff, they keep repeating the same old lie. That's how so many people think.
That's not really what I meant.
Yeah, I understand what you say. So you're talking about the independent writers, your college professors that produce papers and writings like that. But yeah, the internet though is the information highway. I have learned so much from so many because of the internet, and our people had to start utilizing it as a tool and a resource for informing ourselves and educating ourselves outside of the system, instead of primarily using it as an entertainment platform and what have you. So I agree with you there. But did you have anything in closing that you would like to leave with the listeners as we get ready to wrap up today's broadcast?
Well, I just want to say thank you for having me on your show. I honestly did not know about your show until I woke up 3 o'clock that morning and was just searching around for certain stuff, and you know, and I came across your website, and I looked into it. I looked at several of the different. Matter of fact, I looked through the whole. I looked at all of the information pretty much, and then I decided that I wanted to inquire, and now I'm on your show. And I just like to encourage more people to just take 15 minutes out of the month, you know, out of 30 days. Just take 15 minutes out of the month to do something a little different and research something that really has an impact on your life. Like you said, we use social media for entertainment, for fun and games, but then at the same time, we're having conversations about different issues that we're having that are impacting our life in a painful way. And I think that 15 minutes out of the whole month is not a lot to consider, you know, to gain some information about some things that's really going on. So, you know, one of the things that I try to do with my stage production is when I go places, I'm not a politician, and that's not what I aspire to be. But I try to at least leave some kind of impact on people, and I'm trying to do that now with my new production, Blessed by a Favor. So I hope people will come out and support that production. I hope I get a chance to meet more people. You can always go to my website, BarrySMcLeod.com. You can YouTube me, and you'll see the work that I've been doing. And I have always believed in trying to give something positive to the community, but especially something positive to the young people, because, you know, the young people, as we're getting older, we're going to be meeting young people a whole lot more than what we realize. So, you know, to try to give some young people some knowledge and give them something that they can be serious about in the process of them growing up and living their lives and going about their way, that they can always have a little mechanism inside their brain that says there's more going on in this world other than what I'm enjoying and having fun at. You know, I think that that's a very significant thing for all of us to consider doing. And so I appreciate you having me on your show. I'll be listening out for your show a lot more now that I know about you.
Well, Mr. McLeod,
Mr.
McLeod, before you go, because we got a caller, they may want to ask you a question. I just saw them on the board. I don't know how long they were there, but okay. Let's take this caller before you go. Area code 646, thank you for calling in to Black Talk Radio News. You're on with myself and Mr. McLeod. Do you have a question or comment for us today?
Yeah. So earlier, just to reiterate, you said that black people in America should receive reparations for if they're descendants of slaves, correct?
Say that again. Repeat that.
Did you say that black people that are descendants of slaves in America should receive reparations?
No, that's not what I said. What I said is that black people should receive reparations, not just those who were enslaved, because every black person was not a victim of slavery. There were black colonists, my family included, as well. But what they did suffer from, and it's documented in the history books, if you go to even the colonies, where they started stripping black colonists of their rights and subjecting them to racial terrorism. So I said they owe reparations, not just those who were victims or are the descendants of enslaved Africans, but based off of this new UN report that came here and looked at evidence and took testimony. The UN Working Group just issued a report, and they also mentioned the ongoing racial terrorism. So that's what I said.
Okay, so what you're saying is that because descendants of slaves, their descendants were hurt in a physical manner, or
I did not limit it to descendants of slaves, did I?
Or all people, all black people. Okay, sure. My bad. You believe that they should receive, black people in America should receive reparations.
Don't other people, having Jews receive reparations, having Native Americans receive reparations, having other people who have been injured receive reparations? Didn't even the slave masters get reparations? So yes,
but you weren't affected.
How you know I was? Look, I'm not gonna have that conversation. All right, I'm not having that conversation with you, dude. You calling in here to be an antagonist. Obviously, you don't share my viewpoint. And I've heard all the arguments against reparation that I care to hear. So I don't care to hear that from you. How about doing some research, okay? And how are you going to tell me I haven't been harmed by that? I've been subject to stop and frisk in different states, even when I was in the United States military, targeted and stopped and pulled over because of my race. You don't know what I have suffered. My little brother, while I was in the military, was made 10 years a slave, and they didn't have any evidence to prove nothing, just had an all-white jury who was more than happy to send a young black boy into slavery, all right? So, again, slavery is ongoing. Slavery has never been abolished. So, I don't get ahead of myself. First, I want to end slavery. Then we'll talk about reparations. And then reparations will not be only owed to black people who have suffered under racial terrorism and modern day slavery, but anybody of any classification who are on a prison plantation making profits for corporations and states and the federal governments who should not have been put in prison over victimless nonviolent crimes. It's nothing but slavery. So though, regardless of their racial classification, which racial classifications came out of slavery, but no, I'm not going there with you. Sorry about that, Mr. McLeod. Did you have any thoughts on what you just heard?
Well, I thought most of our conversation was dealing with contracts with politicians, et cetera, et cetera. And so I thought he was going to say something in regards to that. He kind of came out of a completely different direction. So, I don't know.
Okay. Well, Mr. McLeod, I do want to thank you for joining us today, and I hope this won't be the last time. Anything you want to discuss, if you got any events coming up, please reach out to me like you did before. We'd love to have you back.
I would love to come back, and thanks again, Scotty.
All right. You have a great day, sir.
Thank you. You too.
All right, let's move to the next caller. But before I go to the next caller, 719, I see you on the board. Let me go ahead and take our final station identification break. Do want to remind you about the ongoing crowdfunding black media. We're talking about public black media, independent black media. We ain't talking about a white platform with black faces on it, okay? We're talking about media produced by and for black people. So please considering making a donation to the North Carolina-based nonprofit Black Talk Media Project. We'll be back on the other side.
No, I'm not a writer.
Okay.
Black Talk Radio, since 2008, providing new black media for the masses. And welcome back to Black Talk Radio News. Again, this is why I tell the reparations movement, I'm going to come to you in just a second, 719. But this is why I tell people in the reparations movement is that you're asking for reparations for something that happened, that you're saying happened over 150 years ago, when in fact slavery has never been abolished. And that's putting the cart before the horse. Let's abolish slavery. Then we'll talk about who's owed reparation. But in terms of racial terrorism, the FBI's COINTEL program, this is part of the congressional record of how they were targeting black organizations, black leaders, assassinating them, and all this. And this person won't talk about, oh, nothing happened to you. You don't know what has happened to me. You don't know what has happened to my family members. And again, I don't come on here to complain about anything that's happened to me personally, because I have never been on anybody's prison plantation. But I know that millions upon millions of people are victimized by the modern slavery system, and I'm not going to be one of those who is quiet about injustice that I see just because it ain't happening to me. I never said I personally was owed reparations because I haven't found a descendant of any enslaved Africans in my family tree. But what I have found is that this county has stolen a whole bunch of land from my family. But that's a separate matter. We working on getting it back. But then you look at places like Rosewood. You look at Tulsa. You look all across all the racial terrorism, the theft of property. And it's still going on to this day. Every last person in Ferguson is owed reparations. for that terrorism that they face in that ticket writing screen scheme that they were running. Let's go to 719. Thanks for hanging on. You're on Black Talk Radio News with Scotty Reed. Go ahead with your question or comment.
Good evening, Scotty. This is Ramon from 719.
Hey, greetings, Ramon. Did you get my email earlier?
Oh, man, you know it, and I'm still going to keep it out there for you. If you need it, I'll send it.
Just all right.
Let me know
thank
where
you.
It needs to go to.
Thank you. Thank you. What's on your mind today?
Man, I wasn't going to call in until that last caller or that person called in, and you stole some of my thunder, so I'm going to just reiterate it. Tulsa, not even 100 years old. I'm from Oklahoma City, born and raised. You know, I know a lot more stuff about Oklahoma as a whole than that man probably is cares to admit, if he even knows. I hope he's still listening, because out of respect, he probably could gain some useful information, you know, with the call-in and the audience. I also think that what was the brother's name that was on, Dr. Matthews or
Mr. McCloud? Or are you talking about the sister, Miss Madison?
No, I'm talking about the gentleman that you interviewed.
Oh, Mr. McCloud. Yeah, Mr. McCloud.
Okay. I think Mr. McCloud is dead on it. That's the type of things I myself am trying to produce out of the people here in Colorado, is that we should be more concerned about getting contractual agreements that hold these people accountable for their term, and if they can't produce within the first 12 to 24 months, they should be gone. Simple as that. I think that man would really help, that listener that called in sound like to me, I don't know, he sound like a white person, and that shouldn't mean his comments mean any less, but when they come in like that, I think that's just ignorant. He should look at some of the more current things. Why are we still having to vote about, you know, exception clauses and the 13th Amendment? These things are pretty obvious that man, if he's intelligent enough to get on the phone and call you up and waste his time to wait as long as he did to say that,
right,
he probably would have been.
And obviously, Ramon, he was not listening, because I did not limit it to descendants of enslaved Africans. At no time I said, in addition to. So, you know,
Scotty, that man could do better if he went and listened to some of the archives. And I can testify listening. I know I haven't heard even half of it, but I know I've never heard you just be limited. Now, I will be limited, so I'll speak my piece. I think if we're going to hand out any more money or any homestead lit type of programs that we call gentrification, I think black folks should get it first. And when I say black, I'm talking about people with melanin in their skin first. That's my opinion,
right,
and I stand by it. And that's all I have to say.
Well, Ramon, you know, to your point, I was looking at this headline yesterday about Israel, the Obama administration calling Israel disrespectful and some other names about them expanding their illegal settlements of occupation further into the West Bank. And I'm like, well, guess what? You the one that just gave them the biggest ever welfare check ever the United States has ever handed out. They just gave to Israel on top
$30 billion.
And thank you.
$30 billion.
Then I was reading about the Colombian peace deal falling through, and it was talking about how much aid that they received. Now, I may be wrong. It might have said 30 million. I think it did say 30 million. It could have been 300 million. I think it was 300 million, because I was like, that's almost $500 million. And then I was looking at the Philippines and the tens of millions of dollars that they get for their military and to fight the U.S. global drug war, where they're slaughtering people and the dude is likening himself to Hitler, you know. And I mean, the list goes on and on and on. I don't never hear none of these, and I'm going to keep it real, folks. I don't hear racist crackers calling up anybody complaining about Israel getting all this money, complaining about
the
Philippines. Yeah.
I don't mean to cut you off, because I want to let you finish your show, but what you said is making me having to put this out here. I mean, like, if that guy was really concerned about people as a whole, he would probably be talking about what Rick Scott is not willing to do, which is try to extend the voter registration deadline in Florida, considering most of Florida is being evacuated or displaced at some point. Now, that's a
exactly.
Once again, another act of who they are.
Hey, you ain't getting no
argument from me. That's headlines today. Why he ain't talking about that? Why he ain't bringing that up as a means of saying...
Yeah, all Americans have a sacred right to vote, Rick Scott. How dare you deny these people? They just went through a life-changing hurricane, and they need more time to vote. No, he ain't calling up, like, you know, on the behalf of other people. It's funny, man. It's funny,
Scotty,
but it's
love
not.
You, brother. I still got your back, though.
All right, Ramon. Thank you, bro. You be safe out there.
I will. Y'all, too.
All right.
Q&A queue is cleared.
I tell you, man, a lot of people, man, they just don't get it, or they refuse to get it, and they don't listen. They don't study these issues. I was looking at some of the comments on the 13th, that film that premiered on Netflix. Again, we did a review of that film on a special broadcast of New Abolitionist Radio. I think that was Friday night. Yeah, that was Friday night we did that. And while we felt like, you know, it fell kind of short in many different areas, overall, it was a good documentary, and it gives people an introduction into how slavery was never abolished, as long as they don't get confused by all that reform talk and mass incarceration talk. You know, the politically correct terms that they use. You know, nobody wants to call it slavery. I think only one or two people refer to it as slavery and what have you. So, yeah, you know, got all of this going on, and this person want to ask me, well, how do you feel like you been hurt or harmed? Or, man, they acting like slavery is ancient history in this country. It ain't. We only two generations removed from slavery, okay? And again, it's never been abolished, but let me restate that. We're only two generations removed from pre-1865 slavery. And we're still in a period of post-1865 slavery and everything that it entails. Okay? Now, again, I'm trying to change my language and be more codified when I talk about slavery. I don't want anybody enslaved. I don't talk about slavery just impacting black folks. It impacts many people, citizens and non-citizens alike. So I'm advocating on behalf of every modern day slave in this country. So, you know, you got to come correct, man. Don't come on here thinking you're going to, you know, throw a monkey wrench into the program and all this and that. I do a lot of studying. I know the games that y'all play, and I'm not going to play them games. I'm just simply not going to do. I'm not going to cooperate. You need my cooperation for you to practice racism. So I'm not going to cooperate with you. Well, it's as simple as that for me. No cooperation with racists, period. And proxy racists. I don't care what color you are. If you practice slavery, if you support slavery, if you support slave brutality, slave catching brutality and all this and that, I don't care what your color is. You on the opposite side of the battlefield, and you my enemy. So let's work towards ending slavery. And yes, people are owed reparations. You know, call up to some of these programs and complain about the trillions of dollars the United States has given away to countless number of countries. Hell, they could have paid reparations with the bailout they gave to the bankers. And then this would, you know, again, we still need to end slavery. But then at least that would be a good faith effort towards healing this country. These people ain't interested in healing. People like that, they're not interested. They don't want all of America to be united. Some of them are even at least got, what would I say, they are principled enough to at least tell the truth about how they really feel. And they would tell you, oh, I want my children to grow up with the same privileges and advantages that I get. I've actually heard a white man say that. And he honestly didn't see nothing wrong with that view. He didn't want a level playing field. He wanted his child to have the same quote unquote advantages that he had coming up. So I can't work with nobody like that. I can't unify with nobody like that. They telling me straight up that they think that they deserve some kind of special advantages and privileges like they've gotten most of the hundreds of years that this country has existed. I am one of the lucky ones. My family's one of the lucky ones, even though they've stolen a lot of land from us, to even be able to hang on to some of our land. They've run plenty of black people off, including the indigenous people of North Carolina who find themselves in Oklahoma, but some of them is $5 Indians. White peasants come straight over here from Ireland fleeing the potato famine, and then they come over here and just have land handed to them. And this ain't no ancient history. Martin Luther King was talking about it, how they were given land and then given low interest rate loans and given scholarships to go to college on how to farm and all the amount. Martin Luther King talked about that. So they get, what do you call that? Handouts at somebody else's expense. They didn't earn it. They didn't pull themselves up by their bootstraps. They came over here where they weren't classified as white before, but because of slavery, they come up with racial classifications, and now they get to come over here and be classified as white and enjoy all the things attached to that. But they think the rest of us supposed to sit on the side and be quiet about it. I'm not, man, you better get out of here. Anyway, that's the end of my program. Coming up is Tando Radio Show. So I'm going to play some music. Those who are listening on the YouTube stream, I'm about to end this stream, but I will restart the stream for Tando Radio Show that's coming up here in a few minutes. So just stay tuned to the channel and you will be able to catch that broadcast. You're listening to Black Talk Radio News. My name is Scotty Reed. I want to thank my guests today for joining us. And that was Mr. McCloud, Mr. Barry S. McCloud, and Ms. T.C. Madison. I have linked both of their websites in the program description for October the 10th, 2016, which you can find at blacktalkradionetwork.com. Recognize the fact that we do live behind enemy lines of U.S. Inc. This isn't a republic. This isn't a democracy. This is a corporation, and we're living under corporate rule, and the corporate rules say that slavery is the law of the land, and that's what we're dealing with. Okay, and so once you recognize what you're dealing with, you can better inform yourself on how the things that you need to solve this problem. And in the way that we solve the problem of slavery is abolition. We need to abolish slavery. And then everything else we will work on a case by case basis. Stay tuned for Tando Radio Show. And remember, Black Talk Media Project is a North Carolina based nonprofit that promotes, creates, and elevates independent black media. Consider making a donation today. Peace and blessings to all. Y'all be safe out there. Don't become a victim of the modern day slave catchers.